Does Jeremiah's book tell us why he was always so angry and depressed? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide, author. We continue our series on the book of Jeremiah. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Matilda Fry, also from the School of Theology. Now, I'd like to come back. This lesson is supposed to be about back to Egypt, the tragic end of Jeremiah. We don't know exactly what happened to him, but apparently he died.
Well, hold on. Just tell the story a little bit here. So what happened? Jerusalem is destroyed?
Well, the chapters involved here, Jeremiah chapter 40 to 44, yeah. And perhaps a quick synopsis would be helpful. Because what happens is that Zedekiah, the king, is taken away. Gedaliah, the governor, is left there. And there were some palace revolts. Apparently, some people who laid plots to kill the governor, and in fact, they did. So others, I mean, it's just really a tragic situation. You've got murder and deception and deceit all the way through. Then the people came up to Jeremiah and said, "We would like for you to tell us. We'll do whatever you say, but talk to the Lord. Ask to the Lord what he would have us do, and we'll follow it." So a number of days later, Jeremiah said, "I've got the word from the Lord." And he said, "Go to stay in the land, be subservient to the king of Babylon." Okay, but they wouldn't listen. And they took him and some of the others with them down to Egypt.
So they made a decision to run back to Egypt and in a sense, forcibly took Jeremiah with them.
They took Jeremiah with them. Apparently, having the holy man with you is supposed to do you some good. But
not if you don't listen to him.
Well, that's the strange thing about it, because they were just openly belligerent, saying, no, God didn't talk to you, even though they had promised ahead of time that whatever you say, Jeremiah, will do. So my question is, it reflects, comes out of that context, but is there anything in the book of Jeremiah that tells why he was so angry and depressed? That's my question. I think that story of what happened in Egypt is a clue, and maybe I ought to just read the passages here, from Jeremiah 44, 15 to 25. And it ties in with a reference back in Jeremiah chapter 7, verse 18, where we had the temple discourse, the temple, and so on. These people were coming to the temple, but that one is very revealing. It says that in 7:18, the children gather wood, the fathers kindle fire, and the women knead dough to make cakes for the queen of heaven, and they pour out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger. So there is a reference back there when the people were saying the temple, but at the same time, they were offering cakes to the queen of heaven and offering to other gods.
Do we know who the queen of heaven is to anybody?
I don't have a good definition for that. Do you, Matilda?
I mean, is it a goddess of some kind, I'm assuming?
Well, we know from the time of Balaam, for example, that that they also worshipped the elements of heaven, the stars and the sun and so on. So it must go into that direction. And especially in Egypt, when we come to the place of Heliopolis, where you have the sun worship very much at the center there.
Well, there may also be some sexual overtones, because in the Canaanite religion, you had male and female deities.
Yes.
And that's one reason why the Canaanite religion was so horrific, because they linked sexuality with religion, not just with human passion, but with religion. And after the exile, there was a temple down in Elephantine Island in which Yahweh actually had a female counterpart. And so you have all of that kind of stuff. So this idea was really
so
mixed.
In other words, this is a syncretism while they are worshiping in the house of God, they are still pursuing these pagan rituals and carrying on. And apparently doing so knowingly and intentionally.
That seems to be the case. Now, I would like to read here. Yeah. There's a couple of paragraphs, Jeremiah 44, verses 15 to 25, because I was actually astonished when I heard this, because the penny hadn't dropped before. Then all the men who were aware that their wives had been making offerings to other gods, and all the women who stood by, a great assembly, all the people who lived in Pathros in the land of Egypt, answered Jeremiah, quotes, "As for the word that you have spoken to us in the name of the Lord, we are not going to listen to you. Instead, we will do everything that we have vowed, make offerings to the Queen of Heaven, and pour out libations to her, just as we and our ancestors, our kings and our officials, used to do in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. We used to have plenty of food and prospered and saw no misfortune. But from the time we stopped making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out libations to her, we have lacked everything, and we have perished by the sword and the famine." And the women said, "Indeed, we will go on making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out libations to her. Do you think that we made cakes for her, marked with her image, and poured out libations to her without our husbands being involved?" Then Jeremiah said to all the people, men and women, all the people who were giving him this answer, "As for the offerings that you made in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, you and your ancestors, your kings and your officials, and the people of the land, did not the Lord remember them? Did it not come into his mind? The Lord could no longer bear the sight of your evil doings, the abominations that you committed. Therefore, your land became a desolation and a waste and a curse, without inhabitant as it is to this day. It is because you burned offerings and because you sinned against the Lord and did not obey the voice of the Lord or walk in his law and in his statutes and in his decrees that this disaster has befallen you, as is still evident today." I mean, that is just belligerence. So when you hear the messages in Jeremiah, where he's constantly talking about this, he apparently sensed this. See?
Mm. Yeah, but the older one, when you read that there, what struck me is that we don't realize how deeply seated religious impulses are in human beings.
Yep.
Okay. And that's especially true, it seems, if there's an element of superstition involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I see these people, these women and their husbands. They lived with what I would call a superstitious view of ultimate reality, is that you have these little rituals that you must do, and no matter what the God of Israel says or what the prophet says, we know almost instinctively that if we don't do these little appeasements, because that's what they are, we don't use little rituals, that the supernatural world is going to get us. And our evidence is that when we quit doing those, we have all this trouble. Now, mm-hmm. Jeremiah would have said they have the exact wrong interpretation of that. It is because they were doing that that the real God of heaven has
yep.
left them go.
Yep.
But, you know, I react to this because of my own growing up. I have seen how powerful superstitious ideas are. They are, Ministry Magazine, a magazine for preachers I read a few years ago, had a whole article written by African theologians in which mm-hmm. they said that the real view of religion in Africa is this superstitious one, and that Christianity in some ways is merely a veneer over the top of it. That's why that other description of doctrine that you mentioned some weeks ago, in the Peruvian mountains, there are still thoughts that people go up there in some of those rituals in high places and somebody doesn't come back. What happened to them? The theory is that they were ritually sacrificed. See, so these are superstitious, they're called superstitious ontologies that somehow connect to humans' desire to appease gods, because that's one thing I can do. I can do this and then it'll be good.
Yep.
You know, it's very different from a trust in the God who you see as benevolent and loving. You know, what do you do with that? Then that requires loyalty. This requires me doing little sacrifices.
You know, Dave, I remember hearing Russell Staples telling about this in Africa, that they were at a funeral service for an African.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it just so happened that one of the black Africans—
These are Christian people, right?
These are Christians.
Yeah.
No, these are Adventists. He said one of the black Africans' eyes locked into his, and he said all of a sudden they both knew what was going on. And the African came up to him and said, "What will the missionaries say if they find out?"
Yeah, that's what they. I think they turned somebody's picture to the wall, right?
I don't remember what happened.
I think so. I think they'd taken the person's picture and turned them to the wall. Yeah. It has some superstitious significance.
But they he said, "What will the missionaries say?"
Yeah.
And Staples said, "They don't know. You never told them, you see." and so this idea of, and even today in Papua New Guinea, for instance, the payback culture, you will still have, if a tribal warfare breaks out, elders in the church, head out after sundown.
To go take care of business.
Go take care of business, you see. And so these customs are deeply rooted. Yeah. And even with the discussions in the church and the ordination of women, you don't immediately go into these cultures and snap your fingers and change that. It takes time.
But see, the reason I reflect on this is that you realize that Jeremiah battled this all his life.
Yep.
Okay. And I can see how he would become so frustrated as if to think this is a waste of a life.
Yep.
Be angry and frustrated.
Yep. And to hear this, I mean, do you think that we did this all by ourselves, that our husbands didn't know?
And this is after the destruction of Jerusalem. This is after all the curses of the covenant have fallen on them, and they're still saying, you know what? We know what we're doing. We're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just
people are so concerned with the elemental things in life. This is about life or death issues here. So these people have this thinking that they have to do these things. I was in the Philippines for the past 6 years. Philippines is a country of over 90% Catholics, Christians. There are certain days, certain nights where they will go into the cemeteries and bring food to their ancestors. They will sit there the entire night and spend the time with them, the entire family, with their dead ancestors. All of these things are similar to what we are talking here about. This is a mix of religions that come together, and they are not differentiated, that here is a God who is calling them away from those things.
Yeah. And see, what amazes me is that in the ancient world, this superstitious idea is everywhere.
Yes.
It's in all the traditional cultures that exists.
Yes.
And Christianity stands in very different contrast to that. So.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing how that social support works. And I remember hearing Etta Lindemann, now this coming to the modern situation, when she pulled away from Rudolf Bultmann and began worshiping God again. Mm-hmm. And her former students discovered that she was now believing in Jesus as a real person. And they would come up to her in amazement and say, "And do you believe he's coming again?" She said, "Not yet." Said it took her several more weeks worshiping with Christians before that became believable. And I think what the take home for me is, it is terribly important for us to realize the value of a believing community, because we are incredibly vulnerable given what happens in our world today. See? And so, you know, we may talk about the pagans and how difficult they have, but we too are very vulnerable with all of these kinds of things. Well, next week is our last session, and we're going to simply talk about the book of Jeremiah, the things that we like, things that are troubling, and we'll do some sharing that way. My thanks to both of you for helping out, and to our engineer, Dave Olson, to all of you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.